Okay, so we are holding on Nunches Amud Beis, the last line. We left off like this. We were discussing the question of when a bell is mekabel truma and when it's not. So we said that we among other things, we made a distinction between whether the bell has a clapper or not. We said that if the bell has a clapper, then even if it's used for an animal, you don't say that it's an animal decoration and therefore it's not mekabel truma, because we said that after all, the clap, then because it has a clapper, it has a purpose because it makes it the person now is able. The owner now is able to find where the animal is. So we said that kind of thing would be mekabel truma, as opposed to, we said there are various kinds of bells, but if they don't have a clapper, then they're not mekabel truma. So in some cases, we said they still are, if they're on the clothes of an eved, we said they're still mekabel truma, because then they're just a decoration, because then they're used as a decoration, as an ornament, and an ornament itself is mekabel truma, but we're saying that that if you have it on, for example, the clothes of a baby or on an animal or whatever, then it's not mekabel truma because without a clapper it doesn't have a function. We said that if the clapper was removed, though, then we said it still remained tamei. If it was tamei before, it's still tamei now, even though the clapper was removed, and it's still mekabel truma. So we said that Abaye said the reason is because it's something where even a hediot, even an unskilled person, could put it back. Rava had said that doesn't seem to work on the basis of a Mishnah and a Braisa about, for example, a pair of scissors that are taken apart, where they're mekabel truma. One part is mekabel truma from the other, but only when they're attached. So when they're completely separated, then they're not. So why should it be over here that with a bell, if the clapper was removed, even if a hediot can put it back, a hediot can also put together the pair of scissors, and we still say that it's only when they're attached that one is mekabel truma from the other. Ella, Amar Rava, so Rava says, rather, the reason is why it's mekabel truma, even if its clapper was removed, because you could still make the bell make a noise by banging it on something else. You could bang it on a piece of earthenware, and it'll make a noise that way. So that's why, even though it's missing its clapper, it still has its function. One point is, therefore, it would mean that according to Abaye, either part is still mekabel truma because the two parts can be put back together, as opposed to according to Rava, the clapper wouldn't be mekabel truma anymore because you can't say that you can bang the clapper against the piece of earthenware and have it make a noise. It's really not going to do this. It's really not going to do much in that regard. Whereas when it comes to the bell itself, then Rava would say that's the reason why the bell part is mekabel truma. Itvanami, they said also Amar Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, Hoyo Boroi La Kishya Agav Echeres. The reason why the bell is still mekabel truma is because it's still possible to bang it on a piece of earthenware and have it make a noise. Which, by the way, then you get into the question. In that case, what would that mean as far as the bell that we had around the animal's neck or around the animal's clothing, where we said yesterday the purpose of it was in order to find where the animal is. Now, if you're talking about where it's missing its clapper, and the only thing you could do with it then is bang it on a piece of earthenware. Then on the face of it, that's not going to do any good. And in fact, the Chassam Sofer, when he discusses this, has a very funny expression. He says you could bang on it until tomorrow. Literally, he says, you're not going to find where the animal is. Nevertheless, he says, though, that apparently the Gemara seems to be saying, and the Rambam seems to be saying, that nevertheless, it could still be mekabel truma, because, okay, you can't use it as an animal's bell anymore, but you could still use it as a bell, and therefore it would still be mekabel truma. Okay. Rabbi Yechanan says a different reason why the bell is still mekabel truma. Because even without the clapper, you could use the bell as a makeshift little cup to give a baby a drink. We had a similar concept at the end of the second parak on Daf Lamed Vav, where we talked about a shofar over there, where a shofar in principle also, therefore we said, is less muktzah than chatzotzeris, than a trumpet. For the same reason, we said, because you could use it to give a baby a drink. So the same thing over here, a bell is useful for that purpose, even without a clapper, therefore it's still makabel trumas, says Rav Yochanan. So the question then is, but Rav Yochanan like boima in malacha rishayna. So are you telling me then that Rashi gives a long summary over here that it's like when you have a keli that, for example, a keli got a hole in it, where even though it has a hole and now it's not completely useful for its original purpose, but because the hole is not so big that larger items will fall out of it. In particular, you have a case where it has a hole. Zayas, let's say, you have a case where it has a hole large enough for olives to fall out of, but it's still not large enough for rimonim, for pomegranates, to fall out of, then we say that's still makabel tumah, because you could use it still for pomegranate. So the same thing over here, when you have this bell that's missing its clapper, and we're saying you could bang it on a piece of earthenware, or according to Rav Yochanan, you don't even need that. According to Rav Yochanan, it's good enough that just you're able to use it for a whole different purpose, namely to give a baby a drink, then therefore it's still makabel tumah. Tosfos actually mentioned that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, it would have to be, Rabbi Yochanan was mentioning giving a drink to a child, which is nothing like the original purpose of the bell, so Rabbi Yochanan would say that only if it's also a case where you can easily put it back together. In other words, that Rabbi Yochanan is sort of going back to what Abaye had said. Abaye had said the reason why the bell is makabel tumah still, even when the clapper is removed, is because anybody could easily put it back together. Rava had shlugged him up from that, but Rav Yochanan is sort of still using that reason and saying that plus the fact that even now it has another purpose, namely that you could use it to give a baby a drink, is reason enough for it to still be makabel tumah. So the question is then, Rav Yochanan like boy ma'in malacha rishona. So are you telling me then Rav Yochanan does not require, in order for something to be makabel tumah, that it's still being used for something resembling its original purpose? Because that seems to be what we're saying. We're saying, according to Rava, why is the bell makabel tumah? Because it's still serving a purpose similar to what it did originally. Originally, you could make it make noise with the clapper. Now you're making it make noise by banging it on something. But either way, you're still using it as a noisemaker. And only, therefore, is it makabel tumah. In other words, according to Rava, if it was not possible to get it to make a noise, then it wouldn't be makabel tumah anymore. Whereas according to Rav Yochanan, we're saying that we don't need that. Even if the new purpose that you have for it is completely different than the old purpose before you could make it make noise. Now you're able to before you could make it make noise. Now all you can do is use it to give a baby a drink. And nevertheless, Rav Yochanan is still saying that's enough to make it be makabel tumah. Does Rav Yochanan in fact hold that way? V'hatanya, we learn in a braita. We know that if a zav sits or leans or whatever on something, then it becomes tumah. It's called tumas midras. But a braita says, the pasuk says v'chol kliya sheyeshiv olav v'gemer. The pasuk says any keli that a zav sits on becomes tumah. So what does that mean? Any keli. Does it mean yachol kafa saw v'yashav aleha? You would think, therefore, that it means even if, let's say, a person took a saw or a large container that's used to measure out a saw of grain, so he turned it over v'yashav aleha and sat on top of it, or kafa tauka v'yashav aleha, or he turned over a tauka, which is a smaller one, a tauka holds half a saw. Tauka means trei v'kav. Two kavim plus another one, so it holds three kavim, a saw is six kavim. Anyway, so the same thing, so a smaller container, v'yashav aleha, and he sat on it. You would think, yehei tameh, you would think it should still be tameh, because the fact is he sat on it. No, tameh goyma, therefore the pasuk says, asher yeshiv olav hazav, therefore the pasuk says that the person will sit on it. Yeshiv implies future tense. Now, the pasuk could have just as well said, "V'yoshev olav kli, asher yoshev olav azov, asher yoshev olav whatever." Yeshev is future tense, so it implies that something that he's regularly going to be sitting on. So therefore, mishem yuchav yeshiva. So it only applies to a keli that's specifically meant for sitting on. Yosazesh, as opposed to this kind of thing, a saw or a talcum, where it's not meant for sitting on, and if he sits on it, then we're going to tell him, as the famous expression is, Amoid v'nasa malachseinu, get up, we want to do our work. We want to use this thing to measure out a saw or a half a saw. Don't be sitting on it. Now, sometimes you have a keli which is multifunction. You have in Perek Chavdal of Kelim, which we learn for your site and during the 11 months or whatever, Shloisha Trisin Hain, you have many examples of Kelim over there that are multifunction. They're made for one purpose, and they're also usable. They're also usable for sitting or lying on or whatever. For example, the first Mishnah over there, when it mentions the shield, you have the first kind of shield over there, Shisakop of a curved shield, is meant for, is to begin with made with a dual purpose. It's meant that you use it as a shield in war. It's also meant that at night the soldier sleeps on top of it. So therefore, that kind of thing would be makabel tumah. But, for example, we have the next kind there in the Mishnah, where it mentions the shemasachin by the kunfun, the kind of shield that's used for practice fighting on the battlefield, for practice fighting in the field. So that one we say is only tumah menes. That one, even though conceivably a person could sit on it, it's not designed for sitting on. And if a person would, they would tell him, I'm Moiz v'nasa malachseinu, get up, we want to use the shield for its purpose. So the Braita is telling us, therefore, that such a thing is not makabel tumah. Now, does that apply only to tumas nidras, or does that apply also to other kinds of tumah? Rabbi Loza Omer, b'midrasis Omer, I'm Moiz v'nasa malachseinu. So Rabbi Loza says, when it comes to tumas nidras, we say that. That only if it's designed for sitting on, then only if it's designed, or one of its stated purposes is to sit on, then it's matamim midras, and if not, then not. The einam midras may meis amoid v'nasim alachseinu. But says Rabbi Lozer, we don't say that by tumas nes or by other kinds of tumah. Now Rashi learns that what we're saying over here is we're talking tchilas tumah and we're talking sof tumah. Tchilas tumah means, in other words, like we said, that something is not makabel tumah unless it's designed for the purpose of tumas midras. Sof tumah would be, let's say the thing broke, or let's say a piece was ripped off it or whatever, and now it's not roy for midras, then also it wouldn't be. So now the tumah of midras goes away from it. Rashi gives an example. Let's say you have a piece of cloth 3x3 tefachim, which is big enough to sit on, so it became tumah midras. If, let's say, now a piece gets ripped off it, then we still say, Amoy v'nasim alachseinu, get up, we want to do our work. Which means, in other words, as if Rashi is saying, metaphorically, we say to the Kaili, it's as if we need you to get up and be able to do the work before that we used you for, namely for tumas midras, and now you can't because now you're too small to sit on, therefore you're not makabel tumas midras anymore. So Rabbi Elazar says we do say that. But when it comes to tumas nes or other kinds of tumah, there we don't say that. There we might say that fine, if it was to begin with not suitable for a malacha, then it's not makabel tumah. But if it was originally suitable for a malacha, even though now it's not suitable for that purpose anymore, only for a different purpose, then it still retains its tumah from before, says Rabbi Elazar. Now, the problem is, as we're going to see, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that, and we were asking on Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan is the one who said before that with the bell, even though all you can use it for is to give a baby a drink, then it's still makabel tumah, that seems to fit only with what Rabbi Elazar said. Anyway, Rabbi Yochanan Omar asks Oymer b'tmei meis amoid v'nasim alachseinu. Rabbi Yochanan says we say the same thing as far as tmei meis, as far as tumas nes. That as long as it doesn't have its original function, even though it has now a different function, it's still not makabel tumah anymore. And not makabel tumah, it's still the tumah that it had before goes away from it. Rabbi Yochanan says that applies to tumas nes as well. So therefore, sort of Yochanan, so we see that Rabbi Yochanan holds that it has to have
that Rabbi Yochanan says that in order for it to still have its original truma, it still has to have something resembling its original purpose. So that would work if, for example, we say that the bell, you can still bang on a piece of earthenware, like Rava said, and it makes a noise. But Rabbi Yochanan was saying you don't need that. Rabbi Yochanan was saying just the fact that you're able to give a baby a drink with it is enough for it to be mekabel truma. That doesn't seem to fit. Tosfos, anyway, has a different explanation of Hamod v'nasa malachtenu when it comes to a keli that was broken. Tosfos learns, actually, that what it means is we say, not like Rashi says, we say to the keli, we want to be able to use you for your, we want to be able to use you for your malacha, and we can't anymore, but rather, Tosfos learns, Hamod v'nasa malachtenu is addressed to the person also, just like when it comes to Tumas Nidras, we say to the Zav, get up off the thing, we want to use it as a saw. The same way, when it comes to Tumas Nes, Tosfos learns, that we would say, if a person, let's say, were to be using the bell to give the baby a drink, we would tell him, Amoy, stop doing that. The Nas Malachena, we want to fix this bell and make it usable for its original purpose again. Anyway, the point is, either way, whether you learn like Rashi or like Tosfos, the point is Rabbi Yochanan seems to be requiring, in order for it to retain its original truma, that it has its original function. So why is Rabbi Yochanan saying, with a bell, that it's still tame, because you're able to give a baby a drink with it? The answer is, the Gemara says, Epoch Kamaisa. The answer is, the Gemara says, you have to flip around the two opinions in the first Machloka. So when
one second. It could serve dual function.
If it was made to begin with to serve a dual function, that was the example I was giving before as far as the shield. If you have something that to begin with is made with a dual function, for example, the curved shield, which is made to begin with in order to use as a shield in battle, and also in order to lie on when the soldier is not fighting, then sure, it's Makabal Tumas Midras. But what we're talking about is where it wasn't made to begin with that second function in mind, but now, after the clapper was removed from the bell, now you're able to use it for that purpose. So this one, according to the second thing that we're saying over here, Rabbi Yochanan would be saying that's not good enough. It's still not. It still takes away the tumah that it originally had still goes away. So how does that fit with what we said before that Rabbi Yochanan had said that even that once the clapper was removed, now the bell has a new possible function. You're able to use it to give a baby to drink, and still therefore it's still makabel tumah. So it doesn't fit. That's the Gemara says, Epoch Kamaisa. You have to flip around the opinions in the first machlokes. Namely, when we mentioned before about Rava saying that you could bang it on a piece of earthenware, and then we said Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina says the same thing, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that the reason is because you could use it to give a baby a drink, flip those around. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina is the one who says that it's makabel tuma, that it still retains its original tuma, and it's still makabel tuma from now on also, because you could bang it on a piece of earthenware, and Rabbi Yisrael Chanina would be saying the one because you could give a baby to drink with it. So flip them around. So the Gemara asks, my chodesh to afkes kamaisa, epoch basraisa. Okay, if you're anyway going to have to flip around opinions, then what makes you say that you should flip around the opinions in the first one? Maybe you should be flipping around the opinions in the second one, and say, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef of Chanina is the one who says that the bell has to have its original function. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, even though it doesn't, it's still Tumah. And in the Machlokas about Tumas Midras versus Tumay Mes, you would say the other way around. Rabbi Walzer is the one who says it doesn't apply to Tumas, that it applies to Tumas Mes as well. As long as this thing broke and doesn't have its original function, then it doesn't have its Tumas Midras or Tumas Mes. And Rabbi Yochanan would say that it does. So why don't you do that? The reason is we can't hasham in and lay the Rabbi Yochanan to buy the ein malacha rishayna, because we find in yet another case where Rabbi Yochanan holds that you do have to have, in order for something to be tame, in order for something to be makabel tuma, it has to have its original function to begin with. Now, it's not exactly the same thing, because before we were talking about something that broke and now has its original function. Now we're talking about something that was made to begin with, whether it has a secondary function, which is related to the first one. But still, we see that Rabbi Yochanan says, in a case that we're going to discuss now, that in order for something to be makabel tuma, where otherwise it might not have, it needs to have that secondary function is related to its first function. So we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan holds that concept that it has to be related. But both by tchila, he would say that both by tchila tumah, for it to be makabel tumah in the first place, as well as by sos tumah, that if it became tameh, then you would say the same thing, that only if it has a function similar to its original one, only then is it still makabel tumah. Only then is it still tumah. Where do we see that? So that's just a Tanya, or it's not really, it's a Mishnah. Sando shabahema shamaskas tameh. An animal's shoe made out of metal is makabel tumah. Now we don't mean like a horseshoe, for example. We're describing over here a kind of shoe which is similar to a human shoe where the animal's foot fits inside it. So what we're saying is, and the reason why you would have it on the animal's feet is so the animal doesn't bang its hooves on rocks or whatever. Now, the reason why we're mentioning metal ones is Tosfos points out because the various purposes that we're going to discuss now are only relevant with a metal one. If it was a wooden one, then it would wear out too fast if you used it for any of these other purposes, and therefore people aren't going to bother. But if it's made out of metal, then it has these various secondary purposes. And the question is, v'maychazi, why? What is an animal's shoe useful for? If it was used only as an animal's shoe, it wouldn't be makabel tumah, because again, accessories of animals, if they don't specifically serve a function for the person who owns the animal, then it's not makabel tumah. In this case, on the face of it, it's just meant to keep the animal from banging up its feet or its hooves or whatever. So why is it makabel tumah? So there's three reasons. Amar Rav, so the reason is because Rav says, Roy lishtos by mayim b'mochama, because it also serves a secondary purpose that the soldier can use it to drink out of during the war. If, let's say, so he doesn't have his canteen, he doesn't have something available right now to drink water, and he's thirsty, and then during the battle, he'll take the shoe off the animal a minute, and then he'll fill it up with water and drink from it. So therefore, so it's considered that it has it's considered that it serves a human purpose. Now the point is, Tosfos says, when it came to the bell before, we said a bell made without a clapper is usually not makabel tumah, even though you could use it to drink in, because to begin with, when you make a bell, you don't have in mind that you can also use it to take a drink. But to begin with, when you make this shoe for the animal, you have in mind that in a pinch you're going to use it to drink out of if you don't have another container. So therefore, again, it's like the shield that has a double purpose, which therefore Rav says that's enough for it to be makabel tumah. So again, if we said it has to be me'ein melacha rishona, that would be enough. Because, again, drinking water is not anything resembling using it as an animal's shoe. But if we say that it doesn't mean me'ein melacha rishona, then it would still be enough for it to be makabel tumah. So that's Rav. Rav Chanina says a different reason is because instead of water, you could use it for filling up with oil in order to smear on your skin during wartime. So we'll see soon that now Rashi points out Rav is going to say that, come on, during wartime you're going to bother with oil. You're not going to do that under those conditions. You'll wait until you get back to civilization and then you'll rub oil on your skin. But so Rav says it has to be at least that you use it for drinking water, which is something that a person has to do any time. We're going to see soon why Rav Chanina doesn't accept Rav's explanation. Now Rav Yochanan says a reason, which is that the shoe actually has a function for a person similar to what it had for the animal, namely, b'shar shebereach min hakrav, if the person is running away from the battle, so the army has been defeated and he's running away. Manichay beraglav. At that point, he'll take these animal shoes, put them on his own feet, over his own feet or over his own shoes. V'rus al kosin v'ala barkanin, and then he'll be able to run over thorns and thistles and other things like that, because the metal will protect his foot. So we see, in other words, that Rabbi Yochanan requires that in order for it to be makabel tumah, it has to have. So we see that in order for it to be makabel tumah, Rabbi Yochanan is saying it has to have some function similar to what it has to begin with. it's made specifically for the purpose of an animal wearing it. Rabbi Yochanan is saying as long as the secondary purpose is also for someone, namely a person, to wear it, then it's mekabel truma. But if not, then Rabbi Yochanan would say, it's not mekabel truma. You can use it to drink with, or you can use it to drink out of, or to put oil. Rabbi Yochanan says that's not good enough, because those are not in any way similar to having an animal wear it. So we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan requires that the secondary purpose should be somehow related to the original purpose. So we see from that the same thing when we talk before about soif tumah, when we talk about where the keli was tameh, and you're asking the question, is it still tameh? Then the same thing. Rabbi Yochanan would also require that it's me'ein melachte rishana. So therefore that would apply to the machloikas about the bell, where Rabbi Yochanan would be the one who says that the only reason the bell is still makabel truma is if it's still able to make a noise, namely by banging it on a piece of earthenware. But otherwise, Rabbi Yochanan would say just the fact that you can use it to give a drink would not be enough. The same way as he says over here that just the fact that you're able to use it to take a drink out of is not enough for it to be makabel truma.
The yakim means the cane is expensive. The yakim.
Well, you're getting a few lines ahead.
I lost the phone. Cut. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the reason is because you can use it to run over thorns and thistles. We're holding four lines from the bottom. So the question is, my ben Rav l'Rav Chanina, what nafkamina is there between Rav and Rav Chanina's reason? Rav, who says that you could drink water out of it, and Rav Chanina, who says that you could put oil in it, what's the practical difference? The answer is, it could be now demoy. The difference between them would be if the shoe is dirty. So in that case, according to Rav, it's dirty. Now you can't use it for a drink anymore. You're not going to drink out of a dirty, even in a pinch, you're not going to drink out of a dirty, filthy container. Whereas Rav Chanina would say, okay, you know what, fine, but oil that you smear on your skin, you're not as picky about. Okay, so the oil is dirty, big deal. It's only going on my skin. So therefore, so Rabbi Chanina would say it's still makabel truma, whereas Rav would say it's not. Rav would say, vice versa, though, I'm not accepting that you can use it for oil, because come on, and on the battlefield, you're not going to be bothering with oil on your skin. You'll do that when things calm down. Then Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Chanina, what's the difference between Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Chanina? The answer is, ikabinai be yakir. The answer is, what if the shoe is very heavy? Okay, so here's what you asked me, Ali. Yakir doesn't mean expensive. You're not going to use expensive things for an animal shoe. Yakir means heavy. You actually find in Tillim, for example, Yakir ba'ene Hashem, Amal Salach Tida, Ben Halo, a number of the Mephoshim say that Yakir means heavy and difficult. It's difficult for Hashem that his Hasidim have to pass away. So the word Yakir in Aramaic means heavy. In Chumash, whenever it says Kovid Leif Parei Vanich Badias Leif Parei, whatever, the Targum always uses the word Yakir for it. So if this shoe is very heavy, then you're not going to be able to use it to run away with, because then Adonai is going to slow you down. But then Rabbi Yochanan would say it's not makabel truma. You could use it for drinking or oil. Rabbi Yochanan says that's not enough to make it be makabel truma, because that's not similar to its original function. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan would say that only if it's lightweight and you're able to use it to run away with, only then is it makabel truma.
Regarding the oil, who says that you cannot use oil on the battlefield to put it on your skin in case, let's say, you have a burn or you have a wound? It would be probably very useful.
It could be, but Rav is taking the view that you're not going to bother with that. During wartime, in the middle of a battle, you're not going to bother with such things. If you have to, then you're going to leave the front, and you're going to go to where they're taking care of the wounded or whatever, and they'll have actual kalim to put oil in. For you yourself, not to take off your animal's shoe and put oil in it so you don't have to smear on your skin, you're not going to be doing that in the middle of the battle. Right, Rashi just summarized it. Rav takes the view that you don't bring oil to the battlefield in the first place intending to put it on your skin. If you find afterwards they need oil, then you'll go to the medics. You'll go to the medical tent over there, and they'll treat you. Okay. So the point is, therefore, we see that Rabbi Yochanan requires that in order for something to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to be Me'ein Velachti Rishonah, and therefore that applies in the same way when it comes to, it applies in the same way as far as Sof Tumah, that, for example, with a bell, that if it became Tumah, in order for it to continue being Tumah, it needs to be serving something resembling its original purpose. Therefore, it comes out that Rabbi Yochanan would be the one who says that it has to that it has to be that you could bang it on a piece of earthenware in order for it to be Mekamel Tumah, not that it would be just that you could give a baby a drink. That would be Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina would say that. Okay. Getting back now to our Mishnah, again, we were in the middle of listing various kinds of jewelry and ornaments that women are and aren't allowed to wear on Shabbos. Most of them, we said, because she may take them off and show them to her friends, or because they may fall off and she may carry them. Some of them, we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, were because she may take them off because she needs the tovel. Whatever the case, so we digressed from that because we were talking about cases involving badges or stamps or whatever that avodim wear on their clothing, and then we talked about metal ones, and we digressed from all of that to talk about metal things that avodim wear. So now, getting back to the jewelry, we said v'loy be'ir shel zahav, that a woman is not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a city of gold. So my be'ir shel zahav, what is that? Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Yerushalayim de'dahava. It means an ornament made out of gold with a picture of Yerushalayim on it. So at the beginning of the Perek and the Mishnah, Rashi had explained that it means a brooch or a pin that she pins to her clothing that has a picture of Yerushalayim on it. Tosfos says that actually it means like a tiara or a coronet or something that she wears on her head that has a picture of Yerushalayim on it. And we know we have an example in history to the other layer of Rabbi Akiva Lebzesu, as we have an example that Rabbi Akiva made such a thing for his wife Rachel. We know the famous story that when Rabbi Akiva and Rachel first got married, they were very poor because Rachel, we know, was the daughter of Kabbalah Savua, and Kabbalah Savua had disinherited her from marrying Namaharis Rabbi Akiva, and he was an Amaharis at the time, and therefore, so the Gemara and Nidarim described that they're lying over there when they went to bed at night. They couldn't afford normal mattresses, so they're sleeping on straw, and straw was getting stuck in Rachel's hair, and Rabbi Akiva says to her, Halavai, one day I'll have the opportunity, I'll be rich enough, instead of the straw in your hair, I'll buy you a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. So we see from all Gemara that eventually he did that. We know the Gemara mentions in the Dorim over there that eventually Rabbi Akiva became rich in six different ways. One is that eventually Kabbalah Savua reconciled with them once he realized that Rabbi Akiva really became a great Talmid Chacham. There's various other ones. There's a number of other things where Rabbi Akiva found various treasures and got various inheritances and whatever and became very, very rich. And he was able to get a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav for Rachel. So again, according to Rashi, it's a brooch that she attached to her clothing, and according to Tosfos, it's a tiara that she wore on her head. Okay, so let's talk about that. We have actually, now in our Mishnah, we had said that she's not allowed to wear an Irshel Zahav, but it's only Osim Midrabanan. Because the kind of thing that she may take off and show off to her friends. But now in our Braisa, we're going to see that there's machlokes on that. Loi takes the isha be'ir shel zahav. The Tanakama says that the Reb Meir says she's not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing an ir shel zahav. V'im yotza chayevet chasas divir Reb Meir. And if she does, she's actually going to be chayev chasas, meaning Reb Meir says it's actually also daraisa to wear it on Shabbos, because it's not even considered an ornament according to him. It would be considered a burden, as we'll see in a minute why. V'cham says she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos, midrabanan, but if she does, she's potter from a chatos because it's only also midrabanan. And Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a yotze isha, but ir shel zahav l'chatchila. Rabbi Eliezer says a third opinion that she's actually allowed to wear it l'chatchila. There's not even an isur midrabanan. It's a little unusual to have a machlokas like that, where you have mina kotze ala kotze, where you have a mayor saying that it's completely also daraisa, and Rabbi Eliezer saying it's even mutter d'rabanan, but okay, that's sometimes you have such things. Anyway, so the my komikugi, what is the underlying machlokas? Why does a mayor say that it's a burden, etc. So like this, Rav Meir Sava Masihu, Rav Meir holds that it's not even considered a tachshit, it's considered a burden. Now, why should it be considered a burden? So because Rishonim explain, Rashi doesn't mention it over here, but Rishonim explain that it would be considered a burden because you don't wear it so much as jewelry. You wear it to show off your wealth, and therefore it's not really considered a piece of jewelry. A piece of jewelry is something that you wear in order for yourself to look beautiful, in order to make yourself look more beautiful and attractive and whatever. Here, it's more that you're doing it in order to flaunt how much money you have. So therefore, so the mayor would say that's such a thing is considered a burden on Shabbos. The Rabbanan sadly tashitu. The Rabbanan meanwhile takes the view that it is after all considered a tashit. Sure, okay, fine. You wear it, let's say, in order to show off your wealth. But okay, then it's still considered a tashit. It's still considered something that you're wearing in order to decorate yourself with. Therefore, it would be like most other jewelry, where we're saying you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos because she may take it off to show her friends. But nevertheless, it's still in and of itself it's mutter. Midaraita it's mutter. It's only midrabanan that would be also. So that would be the rabbanon. And the problem is, so it is a tachshit, but Dilma Shalto Machabuleva Akulasuya. The problem is, as with many of the other things that we're mentioning, that she may take it off in the street and show it off to her friends, and therefore Midrabanon is also because she may end up carrying it. But not that it would be also on a Daraisa level, say the Chachamim. excuse me. By the way, the Rashash points out over here an interesting point. He says that Rav Meir would say, if you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos, then already on Shabbos, then already it's not considered a tashrik anymore. In other words, not necessarily that it would originally be considered a masri, but Rav Meir says, listen, once the Chachamim made it also, then already it can't be considered a tashrik anymore. Okay, anyway, the point is that so the Chachamim say that no, it's still considered a tashit. It's just one that she's not allowed to wear because she may take it off and show it off to her friends and then carry it. But Rabbi Yehuda Saber, man davka lemeifak, the ir shel zahav. After all, Rabbi Yehuda says you have to consider who usually wears an ir shel zahav would only be isha chashuva, would only be a very important woman. Well, the isha chashuva, like mishalto machabia. If she's that important, then it's beneath her dignity that she'd take it off in the street and show it off to her friends. And therefore, now Rabbi Yehuda would agree, Tosfos says, that when it comes to the other jewelry that we're mentioning in our Mishnah, that there's no difference between an Isha Chashuva and Na. Once the Chachamim make a certain kind of jewelry also, then it's also across the board. But an Irsha Zahav, where to begin with, regular women don't wear it because they can't afford such a thing. Only an Isha Chashuva wears it in the first place, then therefore Rabbi Yehuda says in that case, something that's reserved only for an Isha Chashuva, then we don't have to worry that she's going to take it off and show it off in public. So therefore he says that it would be Mutter. Different interesting explanation, by the way, the Nitziv says a vort on it, that the Isha Chashuva we're talking about over here, not Choshuv necessarily as far as wealth, but Choshuv as far as that she takes the fact that your shalayim was destroyed, and we have to remember it more seriously than the average person, and therefore she would be wearing this ir shel zahav not so much in order to show off and flaunt her wealth, but rather in order to show people that look, we have to always keep your shalayim and the destruction of it very uppermost in our minds, and therefore, so again, sort of mayor would say, therefore, that's not reason enough to wear it on Shabbos. In fact, to be wearing it on Shabbos would be also daraisa, because you're not wearing it as an ornament, you're wearing it in order to show people about the importance of your shalayim. That's not reason enough to be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. The Chachamim are concerned she's going to take it off and show her friends, and Rabbi Eliezer would take the view. And Rabbi Eliezer would take the view that she's not going to take it off because she's only wearing it in order to remind people about the importance of Yerushalayim. Therefore, she's not going to take it off and show it off to her friends. Okay. Next, let's talk about Kliva. What about when it comes to a tiara? Now, we talked before
about the brooch. What's the halacha then?
Well, so the halacha is that an ir shel zav is also the rabbanon, and actually, whether you're talking about whether it's a brooch or whether it's whether it's like Tosef said, it's a tiara, it doesn't really matter. Anything that we're concerned that she's going to take off and show her friends is also a rabbanon on Shabbos. So therefore, either way, so an ir shel zav, regardless how you define it, would be also. Again, we talked about the various possible haterim that exist for women to wear jewelry, whether it's because maybe we don't have a true rishus rabim nowadays, whether because women more commonly wear jewelry and therefore it's much less common for them to take off their jewelry and show it off, whatever it is. But the Iker didn't still applies that you have various kinds of jewelry that a woman shouldn't wear on Shabbos. Again, as mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, also you do have the consideration that with a lot of them you may have that if you tell her you're not allowed to wear them, she's still not going to listen, and therefore it gets into this thing of mutav shiur shogegin v'alyu mezidin. As we said the other day, if you see that somebody is going to be violating a din de rabbanon, and you know they're not going to listen to you, then don't bother telling them, because at that point you said better, if they're going to be doing it anyway, better let them be doing it b'shoigig rather than b'mezid. But again, we're saying that properly speaking, she shouldn't. Okay. Going on. So klila. Now let's talk about a klila means literally a crown. So it means, Rashi describes that she wears it on her forehead and ties it on. So you have, now the Gemara is going to mention, you have two different kinds of klila. One is that it's made out of a flat piece of gold. And the other kind is that sometimes it's made out of a piece of cloth, a piece of silk or whatever, with gold or jewels or whatever attached to it. So the Gemara is going to be discussing the two different kinds. Now, how is it different than we learned a couple of days ago? We learned about something mentioned in the Mishnah, a tektefes, and we defined in the Gemara that it's apuzaini, which we said was also something that she wears on her forehead. So the Beis Yosef explains the difference is that the apuzaini that we said the other day that she's not allowed to wear is something which either is not attached to her head at all, it's just like a headband, and if it's going to be attached to anything, she attaches it to her hat or to her tichel. So therefore, fine. So if it's attached to her hat or her tichel, then we said it's allowed, because then the only way to show it off to her friends would be to actually take off the hat, and she's not going to do that in public and uncover her hair. But as opposed to if it's not attached to anything, we said she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Meanwhile, the klila that we're talking about over here, the Beis Yosef says, is talking about where it has ribbons or straps or whatever that she ties it to the back of her head. It goes on the front of her head and she ties it around the back. So we're going to discuss now whether she's allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Rav says it's also to wear it. Shmuel says it's mutter. So the Gemara says, the aniska, if it's made out of metal, if it's made all out of metal, kula amulet, so you'd be osur. Then everybody would agree that it is osur. Because that's the kind of thing that she may take off to show off to her friends and then carry it in Rishus Rabim. Kipligi da'al ruksa. The machlokes would be if it's made out of cloth and it has the jewels or gold or whatever attached to it. So that would be the machlokes, because Mar Sava Aniska Iker. So Rav holds that nevertheless the metal on this is the most important part, and therefore she's likely to take it off and show it off to her friends. Or Mar Sava Aruksa Iker, whereas Shmuel takes the view that the cloth is the main thing, and therefore she's not going to take it off, and therefore she's not going to take it off so much and show it to her friends. There's a couple of different other explanations that Rishonim give what it means. In particular, when we say over here aniska, there's an explanation that aniska doesn't mean it's made out of one solid piece of metal. It's made out of a bunch of pieces of metal that are held together with a string. Meaning, it was like you look at, for example, in the belt they have the minag, you know, you wear an atara on a talis, and you'll often find talisim that have like that. They have a bunch of pieces of metal that are on the talis over there, where the individual pieces are held together with threads. in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that as one type of klil, that we're one type of klila, that we're saying it's not made out of one solid piece of metal, like Rashi is saying, but rather it's made out of a bunch of different pieces of metal that are held together with strings. So again, according to the first version we're saying in the Gemara over here, we're saying that Rav would say that even so, so if it's made like that, if it's made out of pieces of metal held together with strings, then everybody would agree it's osur. But if it's made out of, it has a fabric backing, and then the individual pieces of metal are sewn to it rather than to each other, then you'd have the machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. The machlokes Rav and Shmuel, whether you're allowed to wear it or not. Rav Ashi masni lakula. Rav Ashi, meanwhile, learns the machlokes the other way around where it comes out lakula. Namely, the aruksa, if this klila is made out of cloth, and then it has the pieces of gold or the jewels or whatever sewn onto it, the kula amal is figured shari, then everybody would agree that mutter for her to wear it on Shabbos, because then it's not such an important tachet that she would take it off and show it to her friends. The machlokes would be where it's made only out of metal, according to Rashi, where it's made out of one solid piece of metal, or according to the other Rishonim, where it's made only out of metal pieces that are sewn together. Where Marsav Adjuma Shalto Machab, you have also asked you. So Rav would say it's also because she may take it off and show it off to her friends, and then she's going to end up carrying it in Rosh Hashanah. Well, Marsav, where Shmuel would take the view. Where Shmuel would take the view, man darkel meifas beklila. After all, who wears a klila in the first place? Whether it's all made out of metal or whether it's made out of a fabric backing and then metal piece on it is only isha chashuva. Is only an isha chashuva. And as we said before, the isha chashuva leshalto machavia. So an important woman is not going to take it off and show it off to her friends. Now, that's the same thing we said before as far as the Yerushalayim Shal Zahav, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So does that mean that Shmuel is telling us that he holds like Rabbi Eliezer? So actually, there are Rishonim who learn that, yes, that Shmuel is saying that I agree with Rabbi Eliezer. Our Mishnah had said with a Yerushalayim Shal Zahav, with an Ir Shal Zahav, that it's also in the Rabbanon because she may show it off to her friends, but Rabbi Eliezer had disagreed, and according to that, Shmuel is saying, according to the Ravid, among others, says that, yeah, that Shmuel is saying, I disagree with the Chachamim, I agree with Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, we mean, according to him, the Halacha is not like our Mishnah, and she would be allowed to wear an Ir Shel Zahav. However, Tosfos and most of the other Rishonim disagree with that and say that, no, there's a difference between an Ir Shel Zahav. Even an Ir Shel Zahav is so important that even an Isha Chashuva is likely to set aside her dignity in order to take it off and show it off to her friends, as opposed to a Klila. Okay, it's a very nice, expensive piece of jewelry, but it's not so much like an Ir Shel Zahav that if she's an Isha Chashuva, she'd be likely to take it off. In other words, it comes out, according to Tosfos and everybody else, that Shmuel would say, with an Isha Chashuva, we have to distinguish. She's an Isha Chashuva, so it's beneath her dignity to take off her jewelry and show it off to her friends, but it depends. If it's a relatively cheap kind of jewelry, then we still say it's osur, because most women wear such jewelry, and they're the kind who are likely to take it off. If it's something that an Isha Chashuva, that only an Isha Chashuva wears, but it's not the most expensive kind of thing that she could wear, then Shmuel would say that she's allowed to, because she's not going to take it off, because it would be beneath her dignity. But if it's something extremely expensive, like an Ir Shel Zahav, then even an Isha Chashuva would be also, because even she might take it off to show it off. So that's the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. And again, we have two different versions of what Machlokas is. Is it that Rav says it's also regardless, and Shmuel says it's mutter only if it has a cloth backing? Or is it, according to Rav Ashi, that if it has a cloth backing, then everybody agrees it's mutter, and only if it's made out of metal, then Rav would say it's also. So Amalei Rav Shmuel Bar Bachana, Rav Yosef, the Feirish Amrit Lon, Mishmei Rav, Klila Shari. that Rav Shmuel Baba Chana told Rav Yosef. We know that Rav Yosef later in his life became sick and forgot his learning, and we have various places in Shas where it's Talmidim, usually it's Abaya, but we also have in this case the other, in this case we have Rav Shmuel Baba Chana, had to remind Rav Yosef of what he had previously taught them because he himself had forgotten. So Rav Shmuel Baba Chana tells Rav Yosef, you explicitly told us in the name of Rav that there is a case where a Klila is Mutter, and that therefore automatically implies that the correct version must be Rav Ashi's version. Because according to the first version, the way the Gemara presented the Machlokes, Rav would always say that it's Usur, whether it has a cloth backing or not. So if you told us that Rav says there's a certain case when it's Mutter, then it must be that the second version, Rav Ashi's version, is correct, and therefore that there's a case, namely when it has a cloth backing, when Rav would allow her to wear it, because he would say it's not important enough, it's not important enough for her to take off and show off to her friends. Okay. Fine. More on this topic of a klila. The Gemara says, Amru Leila Rav. Now we know we said though that there are cases where Rav said that a klila is osur. So Amru Leila Rav. So one time the Chachamim told Rav there's news. Osa Gavra Rabba Aricha Lenahada. A great Talmid Chacham who is very tall has come from Eretz Yisrael to the city of Nahada, Umatla, and let's tell you more about this person. Besides that he's a great Talmid Chacham, and besides that he's tall, he limps. The Darash Klila Shari, and he is darshaning for us that a Klila is allowed to be worn on Shabbat. Now, does that mean that he's paskening, does that mean that, and we're going to see in a second who that is, that it's Levi, but the question is, does that mean only a klila with a cloth backing, which would be like Rav, or does it mean a klila, does it mean even a klila made out of only metal, which would be like Shmuel? So you have actually Machlokes Rishonim when we're saying that Levi is saying that halacha is you're allowed to wear a klila, and we're going to see in practice that people follow that. So does that mean which one does that mean? Does it mean only the one made out of cloth, which even Rav would agree is mutter, or does it mean even the one made out of metal? So in Shulchan Aruch Paskins, and in Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the opinion that Levi is being mafia, all kind of them, which means that in this case the halacha would be like Shmuel, even though usually we say the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel in Dinei Issei V'Hetzer. But there are Rishonim who disagree with that though. Okay. Anyway, so who is this tall person, who is this tall Talmid Chacham who limps? Rav says to himself, Man Gavra Rabba Aricha Geitwa, who do I know, which tall Talmid Chacham do I know who limps? Levi. That is Levi. So they didn't know his name, but I know who that is. This is Levi. Why did he limp? So the Gemara explains in Sukkah that there's a difficult kind of maneuver called kida. You have in many places in Tanakh where it mentions vayikod, vayikod vayishtachavu. And kida, the Gemara explains, is a kind of difficult maneuver where the person bends over and supports himself with his thumbs. So it's sort of like a push-up, I guess, where he supports himself on the ground with his thumbs, or maybe like where he bends at the waist, and then lifts himself up where only his thumbs are touching the ground. Anyway, the point is, it's a very difficult maneuver to do, and the Gemara mentions that one time Levi tried to do that, and he hurt himself doing that, and from then on he limped. The Gemara actually mentions in Tainus that there was a reason behind that, because Levi one time, when there was a fast because of rain, Levi had spoken in a bit of a disrespectful way to Hashem, saying that Hashem doesn't care about his people. Whatever the case, the point is that Levi ended up limping. So Rav says, okay, so what is Levi doing over here in Babel? I understand what's going on. Now, the Gemara in Ksubas tells us like this. Before Levi passed away, he gave out the various positions, who's going to have the various leadership positions of the Jewish people after he passes away. He appointed Rav Gamliel, his oldest son, as Nasi. He appointed his next son, Rav Shimon, as the Chacham, which means basically the Abbasid. And he appointed Rav Chanina as the Rosh Hashiva. Now, the Gemara continues over there. What happened was Rav Chanina Bar Chama did not want to take the position because there was another Talmud of Rebbe there named Rav Office who was older than him. So what happened was, Rav Office became the new Rosh Hashiva. However, Rav Chanina then did not become one of the Talmidim, because after all, in knowledge of Torah, he's at least as great as Rav Ofe, maybe even greater. But after all, that's why Rebbe had wanted Rav Chanina to have the job. So therefore, what Rav Chanina did is he sat outside the Beit Midrash and learned Torah privately. And in order that Rav Chanina is not by himself, Levi went and sat together with him. So therefore, so you had, for all those years, Levi and Rav Chanina were sitting together and learning Torah. And Rav Ofis, meanwhile, was the Rosh Hashiva. So now, Rav is saying, oh, if Levi came to Babel, I realize what happened. Shmamina noch nafshi de Rav Ofis. I see what happened is Rav Ofis must have passed away. The Yosef Rav Chanina Bereisha. Rav Chanina now became the Rosh Hashiva. Well, I have like inish Levi lemeis of Gabay. So Levi lost his chavrusa. Now he doesn't have anybody to learn with. And that's why he came here to Babel. So the question is, who says? Maybe what happened. Now, by the way, we learned in Brachas. We learned in Brachas when we had the story over there of Shmuel asking his father after he had passed away because he needed to know where money of Yisraelim was. And we mentioned over there that Levi was kept out of the Yeshiva Shalmaila for a long period of time because of that, because he had sat outside the Beit Medrash and made Rav Ofis feel bad. Because after all, it's one thing Rav Chanina, fine, maybe Rav Ofis didn't feel so bad about it because he knows Rav Chanina is greater than him. But Levi at least should have been a Talmud of Rav Ofis, and Rav Ofis felt bad about that. And we learned over there that Levi was actually kept out of the Yeshiva Shalmaila for many years because of that, until Shmuel found out what happened, and he said that he said that I'm asking that Levi should be allowed into the Yeshiva Shalmaila, and he was. Anyway, the point is that going back over here, this is while Levi was alive, so this is many years earlier, that Rav is saying, if Levi is here, it must mean because his Chavrusa, Rav Chanina, became the new Rosh Yeshiva. The Gemara says, why? The Dilma noch nafshi de Rav Chanina. Maybe it's different. Maybe what happened was Rav Chanina passed away. So therefore, the Levi lost his chavrusa. But Rav Ofis kidekoi koi. Rav Ofis was as he was before. He's still Rosh Hashiva. But I have a like inish Levi lemeis of Gabe. Again, Levi lost his chavrusa. And he doesn't have anybody to learn with. Because Osi lahacha. And he comes to Nazar. So how does Rav know that necessarily it means that Rav Ofis passed away and Rav Chanina became the new Rosh Hashiva? So the answer is two possibilities. Number one, im ista de Rav Chanina shachiv. First of all, if Rav Chanina had passed away, Levi let Rav Ofis make up have a koyin play. Then Levi would have subjugated himself to Rav Ofis. After all, the only reason why Levi stayed out of the Beit Medrash is because in order to learn together with Rav Chanina. If Rav Chanina had passed away, then Levi would have said, you know what, fine, I'm ready to be Rav Ofis's Talmud. I have nothing against Rav Ofis. And I'm willing to be his Talmud. He wouldn't have left Eretz Yisrael for Babel for that reason. The two, whereas if Rav Chanina became the Rosh Hashiva, then Levi has no reason to remain as Rav Chanina's Talmud. After all, they were equal in level, and therefore he would leave and come to Babel. The two, and another reason why we have to say that necessarily Rav Chanina became the new Rosh Hashiva, that Rav Chanina was sagi de le mother. It's impossible that Rav Chanina should not eventually become the Rosh Hashiva. Molech, by the way, literally means king, because in Gemara terminology, we call the man malchi rabbanim. We say, who are the real kings or the chachamim, and therefore the Gemara uses the word melech to mean a Rosh Hashiva. So we know, Rav knows for a fact, that at some point Rav Chanina is going to become the Rosh Hashiva. The key have a kanai chanach to the Rebbe, because we know, as we said before, when Rebbe passed away, he was saying, he said that Chanina Bachama should be the new Rosh Hashiva, and even though Rav Chanina turned down the position at the time, we know by tzaddikin it says that you declare something and it happens to you. Tzaddik goes about Kodesh Baruch Hu b'kayim. So there's no question if Rebbe said that Rav Chanina is going to be the new Rosh Hashiva. There's no question he's going to at some point be the new Rosh Hashiva. So therefore, it's impossible that Rav Chanina should pass away without coming to that position. And therefore, Rav knew it's impossible that Rav Chanina passed away. The only way could be that Rav Ofis, the previous Rosh Hashiva, passed away, and now Rav Chanina became the new Rosh Hashiva, like he was supposed to originally. Okay. So therefore, it's a Dorash Levi bin Hagar. So again, we're saying Levi, now that we identified who this tall Talmud Chacham is, who lived, we said it was Levi. So Levi Darshan in Hagar. klila shari, that you are allowed to wear a klila. Again, does that mean the kind of klila that even Rav allows, or does it mean only the kind of klila that Rav allows, or even the kind made out of only metal that Shmuel allows? That we said you have a machlokas we're showing them on. Anyway, lady darshan that is allowed. As a result of that, nafik esrin va'avak klili mikolah nahada. That the next Shabbos, 24 women from all over Nahada went out wearing klilas. Because once he passed them, that's allowed, then they did that. Darash Rabba Baravua b'mechoza. Similarly, one time, Rabba Baravua darshan in mechoza, klila shari, that you're allowed to wear a klila on Shabbos, v'naf with tamni straight klili mechodim avoya. And then, in mechoza, from one mavoy alone, from one side street alone, 18 women went out wearing klilas. So on the face of it, one thing is it means that in Mechuzah, they were much richer. There were many more women over there who could afford a klila, and therefore you have just from one street just from one street over there alone, you had 18, whereas in Nahada, they had only 24 in the whole city. But the Chassam Sofer actually says an interesting idea on it. He says that in Nahada, they were much more careful with Hilchas Shabbos. Even though Levi had come in Darshan that's allowed, and even though Nahada is actually where Shmuel has Yeshiva, and Shmuel also said it's allowed, nevertheless, there were still many women who were careful and didn't want to wear it, since Rav says that in certain cases it's also, whereas in Mechuzah, they were more casual about it. Okay, we have a Heter, then we have a Heter, and all of a sudden everybody's going out wearing klilas. Okay. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Shmuel. More, let's talk about other kinds of tachshitim. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shmuel, kamra shari. You're allowed to wear it out. You're allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a kamra. A kamra is a fancy kind of belt. So again, Rashi describes, some people make it out of a piece of metal, and some people make it out of, like we had with the quilla before, some people make it out of a piece of cloth, with pieces of gold and jewels and whatever sewn on there. So you're allowed to wear such a thing on Shabbos. Ika de Amri da Aruksa. So again, so some say that Rav Yehuda is talking about where it's made out of cloth and then it has gold and whatever sewn on there. The Omer of Safra, and then Rav Safra says, the reason why it's mutter, needed to have a talus muzhebet. Because it's similar to the way you're allowed to wear a talus that has gold threads or gold pieces on it, because it's considered, a talus you're allowed to, because even though we're talking all this time about jewelry, but a talus is a large piece of clothing. As we learned at the beginning of the paragraph, Tosfos points out that when it comes to a large piece of clothing, we're not concerned that you're going to take it off in the street, because you don't do that. You don't take off, just like you don't take off your shirt in the middle of the street. So the same thing would be with this belt that you'd be allowed to for the same reason, because a person doesn't take off his belt in the street, so his clothing doesn't fall off. So that's one version. The Ikud Amri Aniska. Another version is that Rav Yehuda is talking about even the kind that's made only out of metal, or only out of pieces of metal sewn together, whatever. The Omer of Safra, and then of Safra says the reason why it would be allowed needed to have a Avnet Shomalachin, because it's similar to the kind of belt, in that case, it's similar to the kind of belt that kings wear. So just like a Jewish king would be allowed to wear such a belt on Shabbos, since we have a concept called Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachin Heim, that all Jewish people are considered like kings, and therefore they would be allowed to wear it. Now, we're going to discuss that point of Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachin Heim later on in the Masechta. We're going to see it's not so simple to say that, but over here we're saying that when it comes to wearing something like that, you would be allowed to, as long as it's something that kings normally wear. One point is, by the way, that a number of the Mephoshim explain that actually we're talking about over here, that we're talking about a belt that men wear. And the point of that is, therefore, that now we discussed at the beginning of the Perek, when we're discussing in this whole Perek, kinds of jewelry that women are not allowed to wear, because they may take them off and they may show them off to their friends, does that apply to men also? So one argument is based on this Gemara over here, that maybe it would, but in this case, we're saying that it's allowed because they're not going to take it off because they don't want their clothes to fall off. rather the other way of looking at it is that men are allowed to anyway because men are less prone to take off or less prone to take off their things and show them off to their friends. There's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos on that point. So you're allowed to wear the kamra on Shabbat. Amalei Rabbeinu LeRavashi, kamra ulovei hem yonamai. What happens though if you're wearing a kamra? What happens if you're wearing a kamra over a regular belt? So you have a regular belt to hold up your pants or to go around your waist or whatever, and on top of that you have a kamra. Would that be allowed? Amalei trei hem yonin kamra. So Rav Ashi answers Ravina, you're talking about wearing two belts? Now, he doesn't specify what he means by that. Does he mean, therefore, it should be usur, that you're not allowed to wear two belts, one on top of the other? Or does it mean that it's mutter, actually, because you are allowed to wear two belts, one on top of the other? So Rashi brings two explanations. One is that Rav Ashi means v'chumra. You're surely not allowed to wear two belts, one on top of the other, because the second one is not really serving any purpose. Therefore, it would be carrying on Shabbos. And the other version Rashi brings from Talmidei Rabbeinu Yitzchak and Talmidei Rabbeinu Halevi is that it would be mutter because you are allowed to wear one belt on top of another. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because later on in the Masechta, there seems to be an implication that you're not allowed to wear two of the same clothing, one on top of the other. Tosfos discusses over here that there's a difference. Tosfos says, it's true, Tosfos says, I agree with Rashi that you're not allowed to wear two belts, one on top of the other. That doesn't necessarily apply to two of other kinds of clothing, because two of other kinds of clothing, let's say a person could wear two shirts or two hats or two pairs of pants or whatever, because they're cold. As opposed to two belts have no purpose. There's no function that the second belt is serving that the first one is not. Therefore, that would be awesome.
Can you wear a belt and a keychain on your talis on Shabbos?
So here is where we come to. So if you're wearing the two belts, one on top of the other, so you do actually have a machloitus between the mechaber and the ramah, whether you're allowed to. But for sure, what you are definitely allowed to do is you are allowed to wear two belts, where each one is on top of a different piece of clothing, where therefore, for example, you have, let's say, a belt to hold up your pants, and then you have another belt, you have, let's say, a belt to hold up your pants, and another belt, such as a Shabbos key belt, to hold your tzitzit in place, or to hold your jacket in place or something, that would be mutter. Another example would be, let's say, when you're wearing a belt on your pants, and you're also wearing a gaucho over your kapasa, let's say. So the mechaber says it's allowed even without that. The mechaber says, like the second version in Rashi over here, that you are allowed to wear two belts, one directly on top of the other, because it's not considered carrying. The Ramah disagrees with that and says that you're not allowed to. So what you have to do is have some kind of piece of clothing between them. So again, you have, let's say, for example, one of them on your pants and one of them on your kapota would be mutter.
Even if you don't wear it on weekdays?
Yes. The truth is, by the way, I mean the whole matter of having a key on a belt or sometimes you have people use a key as a tie clip or something is not so simple. You have to have a bit of discussion among Rishonim whether such a thing is even allowed, because after all, you're not doing it. Fundamentally, you're not doing it so much as a tachshit. You're doing it more for the function because you need the key. So actually, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that if you have something that's dual purpose, for example, a key made out of silver that the mechaber brings, that's osur because people are going to think you're just taking it out in order to carry the key. Yesh matirim if it's made out of silver. And then it mentions that if it's not made out of silver, if it's made out of some other metal, then it would be also, even if it's attached to your belt. And yes, shekosvu that noyagin bezelahatir. This is the concept of Shabbos key belt is based on that noyagin bezelahatir. Because according to other Rishonim, it actually would be also, even if you have the key forms part of the belt. Incidentally, by the way, that Amal mentions in that connection another point that, let's say you have, for example, so you're allowed, he mentions that glasses themselves, you wouldn't be allowed to wear on Shabbos because in those days, glasses didn't have side pieces and they're easily going to fall off. And he says, therefore, also, if you have a case for glasses, even if it's made out of silver or whatever, the case is not convicted. The case is bustle to the glasses. You don't get a pair of glasses in order to have a case. You have a case in order to hold the glasses. So if the glasses are also on Shabbos, then the case would also be. Nowadays, we're allowed to wear glasses on Shabbos because they're made differently. They're made with side pieces, and they actually stay on. They're not prone to fall off, and therefore the post can allow them. But you still wouldn't be allowed to wear the glasses case on Shabbos, even if it's made out of silver. Because again, you're not wearing it as a tax shift. It'd be considered carrying. Okay. But anyway, as far as two of the same item of clothing, in general you're allowed to, but when it comes to, in general you're allowed to, because again, you could wear a second piece of clothing, the same piece of clothing because it's cold, but when it comes to a belt, then you have this machlokes, whether it's allowed to wear a second belt on top of the first one, or whether you have to have something in between. Okay. Another din, Amaravashi, Rasuka. When it comes to a rasuka, which Rashi describes as chatichas me'il rechava, a wide piece of a coat. So in other words, it's basically like a wide piece of cloth which doesn't particularly have a shape to fit it to your body. So if it has strings on the end of it, you tie it onto your body, shari, then you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos, because then there's no concern it's going to fall off. The Eloi also, and it's not, then it's also because since it's wide like that, then that's right, it's very hard to attach it tightly to your body. So therefore, if it doesn't have strings on the end, then it may fall off, and you're going to carry it in Rosh Hashanah. You have a bit of discussion about the question of a somewhat similar issue is as far as wearing a jacket draped over your shoulders, are you allowed to wear that on Shabbos? So technically, actually, the Poskim Achronim talk about that technically you are maybe allowed to do that, to wear a jacket draped over your shoulders on Shabbos. However, in general it's accepted not to, similar to what we're saying over here about the Rasuka, because it may fall off and you're going to end up carrying it on Shabbos. We said in the Mishnah of Veloy B'Kapla, we said a woman is not allowed to wear a kapla on Shabbos. My kapla, mankata pori. A kapla is what's called in Aramaic mankata pori, which means, Rashi says, two explanations. Number one is it means a thing kind of like a bib. We talked about this briefly the other day. It looks kind of like a bib. It has laces on the top of it that she ties around her neck. We said the other day that some women like to tie it somewhat tightly around their neck in order that it makes their skin bulge out and they look fatter than they really are, because in those days to look fat was considered a sign of beauty. So mankata pori literally means that it catches crumbs, because it literally would do that when she's eating, and the crumbs from her food would fall on it and get caught in it. But the fact is, it's not meant primarily for that. It's not meant primarily to catch her food. She's not a baby. We're talking about it was decorated. It was a decorative thing, and therefore, so a woman would wear it as an ornament. But on Shabbos, we're saying that she's not allowed to, because again, she may take it off and show it off to her friends. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation, which he brings from his Rebbe, is that it means it's a kind of crescent shaped thing that she uses to keep her shirt closed. Her neck fits into the crescent side of it, and it goes around and it keeps her garment closed. So again, she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos, again, because she may take it off to show it to her friends. Okay. We said she's not allowed to wear rings on Shabbos, means specifically nose rings she's not allowed to wear, again, because she may take them off and show them to her friends, whereas earrings would be mutter, because earrings are a big bother to take off, because after all, her ears are normally covered with her tichel and her bindings and whatever, or the various things that she uses to tie up her hair, and it would be a hassle to uncover her ears and take off her earrings. So therefore, again, as you said the other day, when we're talking about an unmarried woman, then in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says it would be osur because she doesn't cover her hair and therefore her earrings are uncovered. And even as far as a married woman in places where her ears are normally uncovered, then you'd also have the same issue because again, then it's not such a big bother to take it off. So then the only heter to wear earrings would be the heterum that we discussed the other day about why women are allowed to wear jewelry nowadays, whether because maybe technically they shouldn't, but we don't have the ability to stop them, or because we don't have a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, et cetera. Okay. Shukarach, everyone.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Shukarach.
Thank you.